Hello, you're listening to Just Screen It, Case Studies in Creative Distribution. I'm your host, Colin Stryker, and I am not an expert in indie film distribution. I am an independent filmmaker working towards making my first narrative feature, a horror film entitled The Grove. As I've been contemplating my own eventual distribution strategy, I've come to the conclusion that we need more data, more transparency, more information about how the various distribution options that are out there have worked for people. So I decided to start this podcast to help capture some of the experiences of those who have already been through it, whether successful or otherwise, and from those experiences, help both listeners and myself better understand this really complex, crazy landscape of independent film distribution today. So each week, I'll be bringing on a filmmaker who has self-distributed or been personally involved in the distribution of their film. My hope is that future filmmakers can take the knowledge gleaned from the show and use it to make their own decisions on how to best distribute their films. Hey, everybody. My guest today is stand-up comedian and filmmaker Zach Lyman, talking about filming and releasing his two stand-up comedy shows, The Big Laugh and Zen Comedy, through FilmHub. And while we mostly focus on feature filmmakers on this podcast, the efforts and strategies that Zach put in to release and promote these shows is remarkably similar to the feature film experience. Zach and I talk about the pros and cons of FilmHub as a platform, the notion of building a career through multiple projects, and some noteworthy technical considerations filmmakers need to take into account upon delivery of their films. In the middle of the interview, our talk takes a little twist in that Zach asks me what I've learned in doing this podcast now that I'm into 30 plus episodes. I give it a shot, but there's a lot to learn, and it's not always decisive and clear cut, but you get my take on it all in a nice little spiel that I hope makes some sense anyway. Anyhow, this is a great conversation, mostly focused on Zach's experiences, which is what it should be. There's a lot to take away here, especially for those filmmakers looking to FilmHub for their release. So without further delay, I bring you my conversation with Zach Lyman. All right, Zach, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So yeah, just to start out, if you want to kind of give us a little bit of your background, how you got into filmmaking. And I know that you're sort of like a filmmaker and stand-up comedian. And, you know, we'll talk about all that. I think your project is a little bit different from other projects that I've had on the show, and we'll talk about that. That's great. But yeah, how did you get into all this? How'd you get started?
Yeah, I would say I've done video of all sorts before I even did stand-up. So I've been doing stand-up, I think this is my 14th year, and I think I started making videos with my friends when I was like 12 and, you know, Movie Maker, two VCRs, editing them together type of like level.
Familiar story.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Except you don't look old enough to have been like, you know, back in the golden era of VHS to VHS. You look like you're a little bit younger than that, but
thank you.
No, who knows?
I appreciate that. Yeah, I was young. I was like, I don't know, 12, 14, something like that. And I mean, always comedy, a lot of sketch, a lot of horror, a lot of things that would never, even on YouTube, like it before YouTube. And so it's just a lot of stuff that died on a hard drive somewhere. So I've always been in video. And then as I started getting into stand up, the more I got into sketches and then writing sketches, directing sketches. And, you know, as that, you kind of learn sound and editing and all that stuff. And then day jobs I've had with video editing, I've done that for like corporate companies and stuff. So
yeah
always been into it. And then I'd say in the last handful of years, I started pushing into the idea of like making my own content for streaming services. So
yeah. Awesome. Okay. So I've watched some of the episodes of The Big Laugh, which you put up, some funny stuff in there. And I know that you have something else that you were about to put up or that you just put up. Sorry that I don't have that at my fingertips, but yeah, you know, just tell us what you actually have out there in the world and we'll get into some of that as well.
Yeah. So yeah. Thank you first off for watching The Big Laugh.
Oh, sure.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Yeah. So The Big Laugh. And then recently, as I think maybe 3 weeks ago, we launched Zen Comedy, and it's similar concept to Big Laugh, where it's comedians doing sets and then in a special form. So The Big Laugh is episode based, and then Zen Comedy is just in 1 hour special.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So Like, what was sort of the impetus behind that? Are they like comedians that you know and you kind of wanted to get together and do this project? Like, you know, how did you get kind of started with the idea of putting up, you know, sort of little episodes of stand-up comedy, you know, out on the internet somewhere for people to watch?
Yeah, I mean, it all started with just us comics talking about, wouldn't it be nice to have a good tape? Like, it's so hard to get a good tape and a good representation of your comedy. And I think around my 10-year mark, I was realizing that I didn't have something that really showed off what I do.
Yeah.
And so that's how it started. And then, yeah, it is just like the big laugh are some of my funniest friends that I know. And so that's it, just us friends getting together and putting together. We did it in one show. So we take one show and just knocked it out of the park. And I really love how that came together. And Zen Comedy is a similar idea. But the difference between them is I took all the notes that I got from the big laugh from distribution companies and filmmakers and friends. And then I fixed that into Zen Comedy. But then I did Zen Comedy on a smaller budget. So I wanted to see if I did the things that they suggested, but at a smaller budget. Is the success still there? And then kind of playing with this template, and I want to make more of them. So I'm just figuring out the right situation for it all.
Yeah. Okay. That's really interesting. So, you know, I can't say that I'm a big follower of stand-up myself. It's just not something that I dabble in too much, but you know, I always enjoy a good act whenever I see one. So is this something like, are you aware that other people have done this? Have they kind of put episodes of stand-up up on Film Hub, that kind of thing? Is this something you're doing that's kind of new? Like, did you do any research into that?
Yeah, I did. Like I said, our plan was just to film it and personally have the videos. And then at some point I realized I could put it on something like Film Hub after doing a lot of research.
Right.
And I talked to a few different distribution companies, but Film Hub seemed like for my type of project and again, unsure of the success of it. So I was like, let's try this. And then now, since then, I now know other companies that do it.
Oh, cool.
So it is like another thing. And it's funny because some of these are companies that used to make comedy albums and they're realizing that no one's buying albums, but they're, you know, streaming services are buying that. And SiriusXM's buying the audio version or whatever. So like, I think it's a move that's kind of happening in the comedy scene. And I think I just kind of got lucky to be a little ahead of the curve.
Okay, gotcha. Interesting. Yeah, I would think that it would be something that people would at least do kind of on YouTube, right? Kind of put out little sketches and stuff on YouTube.
Yeah.
But it's a whole nother kind of step to do it on Film Hub and actually, you know, kind of try to monetize it in that way. So yeah, it seems like a really interesting choice to me. So you mentioned budget. So if we can go back to the big laugh a little bit, which was, I gather, a bigger budget, I think, is what you said in your comparison. So can you speak to that budget at all? Is that something you're able to talk about or, you know, feel free?
Yeah,
to,
sure.
Yeah,
I don't have like a hard number written down or anything.
Uh-huh.
I was paying out of my own pocket for all of it. But yeah, it kind of helps with comedy. At least it helps that we can do ticket sales.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, you know, you can kind of make some of your budget back. But my friend Josh that helped me film, he owns Heavy Feathers Production and he films a lot of specials for comedians. And so he did this as like at a friend discounted rate to start. And
okay.
Then
yeah.
We worked together on it. So I would say like ballpark budget in my head, anywhere between $2,000 to $4,000 probably.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. And then, you know, you did it at a particular venue. I can't remember. You say in the episodes what the venue is. I can't remember what it is. Is that a venue that you had to rent out or is it one that you just kind of had access to? Or
yeah. So it's at Improv Mania, which sadly isn't around anymore, but they have a new venue that I think they are part owners of called Mic Drop Mania. Improv Mania is a club that I really liked in Arizona that we were all familiar with. And then funny enough, I actually pitched it to another venue and I knew ticket sales would do well. I knew it, like the event would be good. I didn't worry about that. But the first venue that I picked was just such a nightmare to work with.
And really? Then
I just pitched it. Yeah, I pitched it to Dave that owned Improv Mania about bringing it over, being like, hey, I already have all this set up. Well, we just brought it over here. And he was like, yeah. And then as soon as we're talking, I was like, I should have started with Improv Mania.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So kind of going into this project, did you have I guess you said that you kind of just put together these videos kind of for yourself or to show people, and then the idea of kind of releasing it on a film hub came later. So you're probably not really thinking about any kind of real business plan early on or anything like that, right? You're not, or are you? You know, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong.
I would say the weird thing with comedy is the important thing is to get credits, right? Like you want TV credits.
Yeah.
So I would say the plan when it came to Film Hub is, wouldn't it be awesome to have an Amazon credit, a Tubi credit, for some of these comedians that have never been on television.
I see. Okay, cool.
And so it's kind of interesting enough, just getting an Amazon credit can unlock doors for you in comedy. So you're now into bigger clubs or getting booked easily or, you know, performing on festivals that you didn't get to perform on before, things like that kind of. So it's a different kind of plan of making sure that we kind of get the credits, and who cares if we make the money back, because we'll make the money back in the career. So,
yeah, that totally makes sense. Yeah. So once you kind of got this together and assembled, and still kind of talking about The Big Laugh, and then we'll get to the other thing, Zen comedy. Did I get that right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. You know, as you're packaging this together, are you looking at different kind of options for streaming, or did you kind of always know it was Film Hub? Like, what was that process like, and what kind of research did you do into it?
Yeah, I would say the basic Googling of how to Film Hub, how to Tubi, you know?
Right.
And, you stumble on all the videos we've all seen, and I'm joining Facebook groups and being like, yeah, me too. I'm also a filmmaker, you know? And just, I would say I did listen to a lot of podcasts, did do a lot of research, and it came down to Indie Film Rights was one, and then Film Hub, and then a few others. But then, funny enough, I was listening to a podcast, and I can't remember who said it, but someone said they don't like a lot of distributions don't accept anything that's in black and white.
Huh.
And I already planned on doing black and white. I liked the idea of having it in black and white, just kind of like a period piece in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I don't know, like the more I researched, the more I found like issues, but I was kind of already decided on Film Hub at that point. And so I was already in the process. So I was open to it, but I ended up going with Film Hub based on just like how I built out The Big Laugh. So
cool. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I think the black and white, for what it's worth, I think that works really well. It's sort of,
thank you.
Yeah, it gives us kind of this period kind of feel to it. But, you know, I think it also, it's sort of like, I don't know how to describe it. It's sort of what black and white does in a lot of ways. It sort of like boils it down to kind of an essence, you know?
Yeah.
Something like that. I don't know exactly what it is, but, you know, and it gives it this kind of timeless like quality of, I don't know, but it works. And it's too bad that distribution companies are so quick to, you know, reject things that are, you know, taking little creative chances, you know, that kind of thing. Like that's what we want. We want to be able to do that and have an avenue to, you know, take those chances and put things like that out there. But, you know, at the end of the day, I guess they're trying to make money, and if they don't think it's going to make money, then they don't.
Yeah. I get it. It's like, you kind of have to, when you're dealing with thousands and thousands of film submissions, you have to make some kind of guideline. So then, I get it, but it does suck too. And then also making it into episodes, I found out way later, seems like a harder thing to sell than it was an hour. So.
Right. Okay, cool. So yeah. So once you kind of figured that out and kind of settled on Film Hub, like what were sort of the pros of Film Hub? What was the behind the decision to actually do it on Film Hub? What was attractive about that platform for you?
I guess the like not needing to put any money down, kind of like the risk free. And then the fact that like it is just my friends and I. So, you know, I don't have like any investors I need to pay back or anything like that. And I did like that I can kind of have a dashboard. And so I think some of the simplicity of it, I really liked. And then the risk-free, no contract, because I'm like, if this, you know, again, if it doesn't work, I can kind of move on to other things and not really have to worry and put it up later. Yeah. And also I did end up doing Amazon distribution for The Big Laugh myself. So that's self-distributed on Amazon.
Gotcha. Okay. And is kind of the process different for sort of episodic things like what you did versus movies? Like how is that different?
Yeah. I mean, from the beginning, you're uploading, you know, for me, it's three episodes. So you're uploading three different files. You're doing three different subtitles. And the process is slightly different. I would say they kind of treat it like you're uploading three films at once and you're putting into a season. And so, yeah, I'd be watching videos online of people giving you tips and tricks, and it's all about a 1 hour film versus, like, you know, TV. And I feel like a lot of things that Film Hub releases, like blog posts and stuff, is very film and not TV. And I think you realize that they, like, for example, Apple TV, they do distribute on Apple, but they don't do TV shows on Apple, the films on Apple. So it's like, okay, maybe I would like some feedback before I sign up about, like, do you really distribute TV shows to all these the same that you do film, you know? But I feel like it's a little bit harder, and I feel like seeing in the groups and stuff, it seems like it must be just harder for them to sell in general.
Yeah, makes sense. So when did you actually release it then? When did you submit to Film Hub, and then how long after that did it actually get released?
Okay. Yeah, my memory is terrible. And also,
yeah, no problem.
With the Big Laugh, it was a long process. It was, like, very dragged out.
Okay.
So I believe about 2 years ago, I filmed it. So we filmed it. And then about at the end of the year, I think I was finished filming and editing. And then, filming happened. And then end of the year, we uploaded it. And then it's almost exactly to the day, a year ago, it went live on Tubi.
Okay.
It's been 2 years ago, we filmed it. About a year, it's been out.
Okay. And so when you say it was a long process, like, what was long about it? Can you talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah. I really struggled to pass quality control with the Big Laugh. My girlfriend and I tried doing it ourselves using automated systems, using different things. It didn't work out very well. And I think the problem is that each episode has two different comedians, and I think that can cause some issues, some with the automated stuff. So yeah, we failed quality control twice, and then finally got approved when Film Hub suggested that they do the subtitles.
Oh, for a fee, I imagine, right? Like,
yes.
for
a fee, but
yeah,
we are still paying off.
Oh boy. Okay. Yeah. Can you comment on how much that fee was, or at least give a ballpark? Like, is it tens, hundreds, thousands?
I think it was like $300-ish.
$300. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. So yeah. Do you know, like, do a lot of filmmakers take that opportunity or cost, whatever you call it? Like, do a lot of filmmakers do it that way rather than bang their head against the wall trying to pass quality control with whatever their own solution is? Do they just have Film Hub do it? And
well, okay, I'll say this. Well, Film Hub, they give you three tries with quality control. And in her email, she said, we can do it, or you could try again, but if you fail, we won't accept it. So they kind of, like, yeah, ever.
Wow. Oh, okay.
So that's why I was like, well, I guess I'll do the fee, because I don't want to risk it too much. So I don't know. I'm sure there's other filmmakers that get in that situation. But to be honest, I think they probably farm it out to Rev. Because if you go to their website, they promote Rev and they say, hey, we like this company.
Yep. Yep.
So yeah, I would say some probably do it, but then, you know, I'll talk later, but Zen Comedy is, you know, Rev later. But yeah, I think there's a lot of people that probably end up doing it.
Yeah. So, and was that kind of the only quality control problems that you had, was the subtitling, or were there other things as well?
I think the subtitling, and I'll also say that maybe it was just the time that they were going through a lot of changes. It was before they changed their dashboard. I know they just got tons of funding a couple of years ago, and they were kind of, like, moving systems around. So the other thing I had a lot of issue with is just the massive file size, because I was uploading 4K footage.
Yeah.
So the file sizes were just, like, uploading to their servers. I had issues and it would cancel and I'd have to start over. And it took some problem solving, but I think they have that figured out now. So I think those were my two main issues.
Right, right. So yeah, I'm kind of curious, like, with the subtitles then, did they give you sort of feedback on what the problems actually were so that you could address them? Like, what kinds of problems were they? I'm trying to picture what that would be. I've never gone through this experience myself, so.
Yeah, the problem that they had with mine is when we did the subtitles, I was putting... they have a term for it, but I was putting what the comic was saying, and I wasn't always adding the woo from the crowd or the audience.
Okay.
You know?
Right. Okay.
And it's hard to, when you're doing comedy, especially where it's like you have someone saying a punchline at the same time you might be hearing laughter.
Yeah.
How does that stack up with subtitles? I'm not like an expert. So I'm sure there was some of that stuff that was timing wise. So yeah, that was more the feedback that I got. And then after they did it, it went through quality control pretty quickly after they did the subtitles.
Okay, nice. Yeah, so it sounds like they just have certain standards and certain conventions that are, you know, that the subtitles conform to, and they want to keep within those standards because when people click on the subtitles button, they, you know, want to get what they expect and not get some amateur, you know, guessing at what they should get. And so, you know, it makes a certain amount of sense. It's just, it's too bad that it you have to go through such a rigmarole to do it. And then, you know, ultimately it's just paying them to do it for you, you know?
So. Yeah. And I know, I don't know if you notice this, but like on Amazon, I can tell sometimes the subtitles don't match up. They're ahead or they're slower than the film. And I'm like, oh, they went through self-distribution and they,
oh, interesting.
You know, and they don't have the same quality control that Film Hub does, you know, like, So.
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely I've noticed. I try not to watch subtitles. I'm one of these people that just doesn't like subtitles. I know that a lot of people do it now. It's kind of a thing to do, but I still resist it as much as I can. But I still, you know, every once in a while I have situations where I have to do it. And yeah, you definitely notice things that are off and wrong. And it's like, if Film Hub is, you know, doing quality control, like, you know, what are they expecting compared to what I'm watching on Amazon or whatever? But
So I'm like, I was stressed out and wanting to like cry as I'm dealing with this, but at the same time, I now looking back, I'm like, I'm happy that they have like, they're holding me to a standard that makes sure that across the board in the world, it's going to be correct.
Yeah. In the end, you want your product to look professional and you want people to have a good experience watching it. And so it kind of makes sense. It's just, I think it's just, you know, sort of the lesson in general for filmmakers is just that, like, once your film is done, it's not done. There's still more to do. You know, all of these like little deliverables are things that you have to keep in mind and plan for. And, you know, just don't expect that you're going to finish your film, you're going to export it from Resolve or whatever you're editing in, and then submit to Film Hub and you're done, you know, a day later, you know, like there's a whole process there that is can take a long time to resolve.
Yeah. And I'll that's the other thing that I'll say too, is with Film Hub, but I also, I see it with other distribution, is these graphics that you give them, you don't know how streaming services are going to use them. So you're giving them, let's say 10 different graphics. Mm-hmm. You know, and for example, on Film Hub, when you go to the Big Laugh, the background picture that I designed is not what they picked. They used a photo from one of the episodes that we, you know, so it's a graphic that's supposed to be for episode one is the background. And that's just kind of what I've seen on streaming. So it's kind of like, I don't know if Film Hub doesn't know or what, but there's some miscommunication. Kind of making graphics, just hoping, you know.
Yeah. You kind of wish there was a service out there that would do what Film Hub does, but just basically just they're just the streaming site, and you're using their streaming resources, but you have control over everything else, and you can, you know, you can sink or swim by the work that you do, you know. Maybe they shouldn't take as much as 20% if that's going to be the case, but you know, sometimes it is weird how they just select these weird things. I've had movies in the past where just like the frames that they'll pick to display from the film are like, what? This frame has nothing to do with the movie. It's just some random, you know, like, where did they get that? Where do they decide that? So yeah, it's really weird. And you want to be able to have that kind of control, but I guess you can't, you know, unless you want to stream it yourself. And that's, you know.
Yeah. There's like a certain point that you just have to let go of, like, I know it's your baby, but like, it's now they own it.
Yeah. So once it got out there, how has your experience with them been since, you know, since it got, so I guess you submitted it, and then how long did it take for it to get actually released? Did it get released on all the platforms at once? Did it kind of go step by step? Like, how did that work out?
Yeah, I would say it was a slow process afterwards too. I think for the first, I might be wrong, but I think it was the first 2 months it wasn't live anywhere.
Yep.
And then out of nowhere, Tubi bought it. And then it was still like a month after Tubi bought it, it came out. So I think like maybe 3 months after I submitted it, I was kind of like twiddling my thumbs, wondering when this is going to happen.
Right, right. And ultimately, where did it land? Tubi and Amazon? Or I guess you said you self-distributed on Amazon, right?
Yeah.
So Tubi, anywhere else then that it landed after that?
Yeah, I would say like we've had some good success of like we've sold it to, I don't know, off the top of my head, I'd say maybe 12 to 14 streaming services.
Okay.
And some larger, some smaller. But
yeah,
here we are a year later and it's not live on a lot of those. And it's just now becoming live on some of these are trickling out.
Wow.
So honestly, the first year, like our income has just been Tubi and everything else is like just now live.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. That's a long time to wait for income. It's crazy. Yeah. Yeah. So how has it been? I mean, first of all, maybe comment on Tubi. I know that Tubi has, there've been some weird things happening with Tubi lately that people have been talking about, but you got it out there before a lot of that stuff started happening. So, and I know, you know, past episodes of this podcast, people have had generally good experiences with Tubi. They've been getting better revenue streams from Tubi than anywhere else. It seems like AVOD is sort of like, you know, where a lot of film viewing audiences landed lately, you know, that kind of thing. So how did that work out for you?
Yeah, I would say, you know, not that I have much to compare it to, you know, as we're like slowly rolling out to these other places and I'm seeing like 3 cents from a streaming service that's like, I've never heard of. You
know? Right.
With Tubi, like I would say consistently, like we don't really promote it anymore. And it's still consistently getting $20 to $40 a month pretty evenly.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I mean, a few months of $40 a month and you should be able to pay it off pretty quickly. But I know that the film itself had some expenses associated with it too. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, do you feel like you're anywhere close to being in the black on that one, or is it still a pretty big expense at this point?
I would say it's still a big expense and I haven't really recouped anything. Yeah. You know, I'm just like in my Film Hub account, I'm just watching it pay off that negative that they put on my account.
Gotcha.
Besides that, you know, and now it's on Amazon and, you know, I think we've made like $20 there or something like that. But yeah, I don't know. I would say like we, comedy wise, have made the money back like in our own careers, kind of using that to get in on shows and stuff. So I'd say like in my mind, I'm not even counting it anymore and I'm okay with what it made. So yeah, in my mind, it's kind of paid off, but
yeah, no, and that's totally cool. And I don't mean to like focus all on the money aspect of it, because I know that that's not what you're really in it for. It's just, you know, that's what I talk about on this podcast sometimes.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to, because I'm also in those Facebook groups and seeing people that say they made $70,000 off of Tubi. Yeah,
right.
You know, and
right.
Then there's other people being like, I've made $10, you know?
Yeah. And you're trying to we're all trying to parse that world and figure out what works and what doesn't. And
there's
so many different choices and ways to go about it. And the data is all over the place. And so that's kind of what this podcast is about, is, you know, trying to at least provide a little bit of transparency in one area and see what people can glean from that, you know, not that the message is consistent, you know, across, you know, 30 plus episodes now. I think, you know, probably the kind of contradictions and the differences in experiences between people probably stand out more than the similarities, you know, because there's just so much variety and variation in how movies do and how movies are received and how they get distributed and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, but it makes it very interesting to track.
Yeah. And now that I've listened to most of the episodes of this podcast, I did want to ask you, has this changed your thoughts on things? And has this helped or has this just driven you mad?
That's a great question. And, you know, a little bit of a diversion from interviewing you, but that's okay. I'm happy to talk about it. Yeah, I mean, I would definitely say it's educated me. There's no doubt about that. You know, just hearing the wide variety of experiences, I don't know if it's like, it's not the same as reading a textbook and like, you know, I can like, I have this piece of knowledge and this piece of knowledge and this piece of knowledge. So tomorrow I could take a test on what I learned. You know, it's not like that. It's more like it just, a picture congeals in your brain of what the distribution picture is like. And sometimes that picture is contradictory and paradoxical and, you know, things like that. It's not consistent, but at least it's there. At least there's a feel for it, you know, a knowledge of it that you can, as a filmmaker going forward, I can work with and think about in terms of, you know, ultimately making my film and distributing it. And I would say that in the end, I still have no idea what I'm going to actually do to distribute my feature when I make it. So it hasn't answered that question. But it's given me the data to consider it. And I think it certainly has given me the data to, you know, not consider getting on Amazon to be much of a victory, right? You know, because Amazon, you know, you get a cent per viewing or 2 cents per viewing or something like that, you know, so I probably won't consider that anything special, you know, and, you know, I really don't know, you know, I think I still need to cogitate on it for a long time and do more interviews and stuff like that, but it it's an ongoing learning experience, I guess. And it's definitely been productive. Now, you said, has it driven me mad? And I will say that that's probably a little true too, you know, because it's sad. It's sad that it's so hard for filmmakers to get their, you know, in a world where both filmmaking itself and releasing content are as democratized as they've ever been.
Yeah.
So hard to actually get audiences to come and see your content. And, you know, that is actually okay with me, because that's the way it is. If everybody's going to be making films, then you're going to have lots of voices and you have to find ways to stand out among those voices. But what really bugs me is how hard it is for filmmakers to actually break through and see a fair share of the revenue for the hard work that they've put in, that there's so many gatekeepers and people who take pieces of that pie before the filmmakers do. That, I think, is an injustice, you know, that's keeping filmmakers from being able to, you know, really fully realize the opportunity to make films and communicate with people. So I'd love to see that ways that that can change. But, you know, it's I'm not holding my breath either, you know.
Yeah.
And also, I'll say, I'm sorry, I'm going on a little bit of a rant here. But
no.
You
know,
the final thing that I'll say is that it hammers home the idea that if you're in this to make money, you shouldn't be doing it, right? If you're in it to even make your money back, you shouldn't be doing it. I mean, all the power to you if you can, and it's great if you can, but I think that you've got to love filmmaking, and you have to love the process of it and doing it enough to, you know, spend the money wherever it comes from, whether it's yourself or investors or, you know, crowdfunding, whatever it is, spend that money and accept that you're probably never going to see that money back. Your investors are never going to see that money back, but there's still a great value in that process, in doing that. And seeing that through and sharing, you know, what you have to say with the world. And you have to have that. If you don't have that in your heart, I think you're going to be in trouble, you know, with the way things are today. So, yeah, that's my spiel.
Yeah, I had a feeling from listening to the episodes, that's how you feel. And it really does remind me of, in comedy, it's kind of the same, where you listen to these comedy podcasts and then someone's like, oh, I was at an open mic and Jerry Seinfeld said, come on tour with me, and I've been making millions of dollars since. And you're like, okay, that happened one time to one person, you know?
Right.
And then everyone else has like all these other stories, like Ray Romano 20 years before he did anything, you know, big, or, you know, stuff like that. So it's like,
It
can be frustrating. Yeah, I knew that if I did my best of doing the research and then releasing it, and then my day job for the last like 10 years has been marketing. So I'm like, I can market this. Get eyeballs on it somehow without, you know, blowing millions of dollars on it. So I'm happy with how it came out, but financially, it definitely hasn't made its money back.
Yeah. That's okay. Like, you know, for the reasons we just kind of talked about, you know, that's okay. You got a lot of value out of it that aren't financial. And I think that's, you know, that's really important to focus on that and not be so focused on money, you know.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that filmmaking is such an expensive art that it's not like anybody's trying to make a profit. They're just trying to make the money back that it costs to make the fucking movie, you know. And that's the problem, is just like maintaining, you know, sustaining it for movie after movie when it's so expensive, I think is the hard part. But yeah, so kind of on that note, let's talk a little bit about Zen Comedy. So that's, you know, something that you've done more recently. What did you bring from the experience with The Big Laugh into that? What were you trying to do differently? What were you trying to do the same? Like, what were your, you know, kind of aspirations for doing that second project?
Yeah. So as I kind of mentioned earlier, I was like, I want to do similar, but I want to make sure that I have a better understanding of the budget, what that is, and how costly this is. And then also not making it black and white, making it color, and then putting it into, you know, one film. And then again, I just picked some friends that I enjoyed their comedy, and I wanted other people to be able to see their comedy.
Mm-hmm.
and we got together, and then I filmed it at a Reiki Academy, which is a, I just tell people it's like a yoga studio. It's very new age Zen place. And I used to run shows there, and I really liked the spot. And it's good for like, if you have 30 seats filled, it's a wonderful show. And so that was really the goal, was just to kind of like take what I learned and kind of step it up. But then also it's, we only filmed with 3 cameras instead of, I think, 4 or 5 for the big mm-hmm. laugh. And we, you know, really like toned things down. And I was like, how simple can I make this? And then kind of going from there of like a game plan of like, if I want to do multiple of these, what does that look like? And I really do feel like I learned so much between those two of simple, just technical side of editing.
Nice.
And it just color grading and all that stuff. So really stepped up my game with this one. And I really like how it turned out. And then also learning how to deliver it to Film Hub the right way was like
right.
that step. And so everything from beginning to end was a million times smoother this time around.
Yeah. I think that's fantastic. I mean, that's every filmmaker should have as their goal, you know, give up on the idea of making the one big film, getting picked up by Hollywood and, you know, you're off to the race. You know, every filmmaker should make it their goal that, you know, every film they make is a stepping stone to the next one. It's a learning opportunity. It's an opportunity to, you know, maybe be more successful in way, however you measure that. That's, you build a career out of that, you know, yeah. whether it's a career, a professional career where you're actually making money doing it or not, I don't know, but I think it can be a career, even if you're not making money, even if it's just something that you are dedicated to enough to call it a career because you're doing it again and again and again and progressing the whole way, you know, that's a career.
Yeah.
So when did you actually submit this one to Film Hub? And I guess I should ask this question, like, what did you do about the captioning this time around?
Yeah, so I submitted it in December.
Okay.
And for the Big Laugh and for Zen Comedy, I have Instagram group chats with uh-huh. the comics. And I just kind of send quick, like, hey, little updates of like, I'm submitting it. This is the process. And so I told them in December, I was like, it could be 3 months. It could be 4 months. We don't know. And so I submitted it like on the 15th. And then like the 17th, it was like approved and already bought by 2 streaming services.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting. Interesting. The difference in experiences.
Yeah. And to answer your question about subtitles, I did rev.com. I paid them like $80 or $90.
Right.
And it passed first step. So
nice. Okay. Yeah. And you're probably right that that's probably what they're using. And then they're upselling, you know, they're upcharging you. So you kind of got around that one going direct to them. And that made sense. And so, yeah, is it now up on, I guess you said it came, so you said 3 weeks ago or something like that. So
like super quick. So yeah, Amazon was one of the first ones to buy it day of.
Okay. Yeah.
And then it was like live, like within a week or so. And so I guess maybe it's been out for roughly a month, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Any insight into why it got picked up so much quicker this time around? Do you think that it was actually because of your efforts to make it, you know, sort of bring it up, bring the technical stuff up a notch or something like that? Like, what was it? Do you have any idea?
If I could tell you my conspiracy theory.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
My conspiracy theory. One issue that I think with the Big Laugh is that it's these massive 4K files.
Yeah.
I think if you read on their, in their form or whatever, they say that they give 1080p files. So at some point they had to convert it down from 4K to 1080p, these massive files, and deal with all that restructuring. It made me wonder if giving them a 1080p would really speed up the process.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, I kind of assumed that the fact that I gave them a 1080p right away, it got approved right away. Amazon bought it because they didn't have to do anything to it. And then also being in color and being the right amount of hours. I just think all that, all my guesswork and all of the things I hear in the forums applying that really showed in the first week. Like, I mean, you know, they really couldn't get the Big Laugh on Amazon is why I had to do it.
Yeah.
But then I had no problem with Zen Comedy first thing Amazon bought. So I think that's my conspiracy theory.
Yeah, that's great. And so do you... Well, I guess for, you know, first of all, the conspiracy theory thing, like I'm a little surprised that they, I mean, don't people have like, you know, I don't know anything about this stuff, to be honest with you. I'm probably expressing some ignorance, but don't people out there have like 4K TVs? And so don't they want to watch stuff in 4K? And so isn't like stuff being shown in 1080p kind of a letdown for them, you know? And, you know, like I would think that I would honestly think that when you're submitting to Film Hub, they'd probably want both. They'd want a 4K version and a 1080p. And then they distribute those accordingly, you know, depending on the, you know, the streaming platform's demands or whatever. So,
yeah. Well, when you do self-distribution with Amazon, they don't accept 4K.
They don't accept 4K at all. Wow.
They don't accept 4K at all. And I know a lot of streaming services don't accept 4K. And I can, in it's funny enough. So the 4K footage is Tubi of The Big Laugh. And then you go over to Amazon, it's 1080p that I uploaded. And it looks so much better.
Really?
Okay. The quality really stands out. And so I don't know what's happening, but I'm wondering if Tubi is not even 1080p. Maybe it's 720, you know? So I think they've probably just made a call of like, most are using this. I think we can get safely all the... So that's like kind of what I tell comics. I tell comedians all the time too, where I'm like, film it in 4K and then export in 1080p because like, who's gonna see the difference?
Right. And you know, honestly, like you can see a streaming platform probably doesn't want to stream something that's at 4K. You know, they want to stream something that's a lower bandwidth too. So, you know,
yeah,
it does kind of make sense. It's just, interesting. It'll be interesting to see if that changes.
Yeah.
You know, over the next decade or so, like as people are now out shooting on 8K and 12K and stuff like that, like, is anybody going to even care about this higher resolution stuff? I don't know, but
yeah.
How's it done for you so far? Do you have any, like any returns from these platforms? Or, you know, do you see anything different from before or like, how's it going?
Yeah. One thing that for both of them on the marketing side is the first time around for The Big Laugh, as soon as The Big Laugh came out, I gave away an iPad and I did this giveaway of an iPad and all you had to do is sign up with your email on a landing page.
Right.
And then when you signed up, I would throughout the month be like, hey, check out my show. You know, it just kind of like, you know, these people that don't know me to watch it.
I mean, the giveaway was like a random drawing, right? You weren't giving an iPad to everybody who gave you.
No. Yeah. Random right. One iPad.
Just to be clear.
Yeah. So I was giving away one iPad and then, you signed up for the, you know, for the chance to get that. And so then we did that again with Zen Comedy and we gave away a Amazon tablet so then you could watch it on Amazon.
Right.
And so we did that. And I saw a lot of success of, you know, we had 1,000 people sign up and out of that 1,000, I got a lot of emails of people being like, I just watched it and it was great. That, you know, don't know any of us. And so I really thought that would help. I don't have the numbers yet. I would say my dashboard isn't really up to date with the full month of stuff, but I really do have a good feeling about our chances on Amazon with Zen Comedy. And I think it's going to do really well. And I'm excited to see when it gets to Tubi, how it'll do. So
nice. Okay. So it's not out on Tubi yet. That's still coming.
No, they haven't bought it yet, but
okay.
I assume, you know, if it matches the timeline, it's still a month or so before.
Right. Of course, people have been talking about how Tubi's changed now, right? They're doing their own content and, you know, they're like, you know, getting a little stricter about what they buy and things like that. So who knows where that's going to go?
Yeah. But of course, in my mind, I'm one of those filmmakers that's like, yeah, but mine looks great, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Why wouldn't they, you know? But
right,
yeah,
right. No.
Also, like, maybe it won't. But
you just don't know. Yeah. You just don't know. You don't know. And that's, I think that's a, nobody knows. Nobody knows how things are going to change. Nobody knows how, you know, one platform or distribution avenue, everybody flocks to it. Everybody hears it's great. Everybody flocks to it. And then it gets oversaturated and it shifts. And then, you know, everybody gets screwed and some other service comes along and everybody flocks to that. And it sort of repeats itself over and over, you know, and it's just always changing. It's an ever shifting landscape. So you just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. But I would say like with The Big Laugh, you know, it really like one a month would buy it for a while and, you know, like here and there really get picked up. But with Zen Comedy, you know, within the month, we've already had, I think, 6 or 7 buy it.
Yeah.
So, like, I feel good that, like, it really is going to ramp up. It clearly is just getting picked up quicker than the big was.
Yeah, that's great. And that's what you hope for as a filmmaker, right?
Yeah.
And it gets back to that career, that stepping stone thing is like, you've got your second stepping stone. You hope that that does better than the first one. Doesn't always, but hopefully it does. And in this case, it sounds like it did. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, what's next for you? Like, do you have plans to do something else? Or you have plans to do a feature film? You have plans to do comedy? Like what's on your radar?
I just released a documentary on YouTube.
Okay, nice.
That I went and filmed a comedy festival. It was their first year, and it's very much the idea of, will it be a success or will it be a big failure? You don't know.
Right, right.
And I love how it turned out. It's like 22 minutes, so that's why I put it on YouTube. I was like, first time kind of ever doing something like that. So I'm happy with that. And I'm planning on doing a few more comedy related documentaries. And then I already have another big laugh Zen comedy style thing booked for April that we're going to be filming with actually comics that I don't know. So this will be my first time, being very professional and having,
cool. Okay.
Contracts that say things and
Yeah. So that's like, it kind of feels like another step up. And I could definitely see like this becoming a thing. This could become a business for you, right? A business for budding stand-up comedians, that you film them and you put them out on these specials, and the more attention you attract to them, the better and the more appealing that becomes to the comedians that you approach, kind of sign up with you or whatever. So sounds really cool. Yeah. Sounds like an interesting avenue.
I'm teaming up with my buddy who's starting kind of a distribution company of his own audio side of things.
Yeah.
So he's going to take the audio version of it and hopefully get it on Sirius XM and do like an album release and kind of like find the other. And then, hopefully the comedians can make some revenue from this down the line.
Or right.
We can have some kind of success with the other avenues and it all adds up to something. But yeah, kind of like growing that way. I definitely don't want to become like a comedy director of any sort, because I'm such a stand-up and stand-ups love to just do their own thing and not have bosses. So kind of like, I'll make, comedy things for people that I think are funny. Sure.
Totally makes sense. Yeah. Cool. So that all sounds great. I'm really interested to see where it goes, what happens. I'll be tracking you for, kind of see what your next thing is in April, whenever that comes out. I don't know how long it'll be, but it sounds like a great plan and some really interesting stuff. So anything that we didn't kind of talk about that you wanted to talk about on the show, anything like that?
No, I think we kind of covered it all. We talked about, the numbers and, the process. Oh, I guess I've been working on a YouTube channel of releasing kind of updates of this, of just,
oh, wow. Okay.
So I've been like documenting the process in sort of ways, but kind of like streamlining it too. I made a video of like how to film a special for comedians of all the technical side. And then I just did one of like how to get distribution and kind of talk about the different avenues. And then I also have like videos about email lists and stuff like that. So I think like I'm trying to like grow that also for my selfish reasons of kind of reviewing this, all this info we take in and being like, is any of this helpful? Am I learning from this? And kind of really what I see work and not work. And the importance of an email list is crazy for filmmakers.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually the thing that remember a few minutes ago when I had something to say and I completely forgot what it is. That's what I was going to say, was kind of talking about how you got that email list. And that email list is, those kinds of things, those email lists become your fan base, right? Yeah. And it speaks back to that kind of stepping stone idea, is that now you have, a growing base of fans that you can send emails whenever you've got something new out on the internet or whatever for them to watch. You have this growing fan base that will watch your films, and hopefully you'll get a little bit of money from that and, be able to turn it into something sustainable. So
yeah,
I think that's really cool. Really smart.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool to see, like when we did the big laugh, I think we got like 600 or 800 emails.
Yeah.
And nice. Now with the Zen comedy, we're up to like 2000 or something emails. And it's great that I'm really excited that this next project, I get to email 2000 people and be like, hey, we have a new thing for you to watch. Exactly. Documenting. And that's why I love about Film Hub's dashboard is it's, especially with Tubi, it's pretty quickly to update.
Yeah.
Documenting and seeing how that turns out.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I guess the only other question that I'd ask, just kind of on the distribution front, is there anything that you've learned from those first two sets of episodes that you put out? Anything that you've kind of learned from that that is maybe going to make you approach distribution a little bit differently the next time around? Or do you think you're just going to kind of stick with what you know, what works, and kind of go that route?
Yeah, I would say I definitely have learned a lot about, add an extra camera, get the extra angles, get the extra, right? All that stuff that we kind of already know, but don't always follow the rules of. And then I would also say, what's been really interesting is I put the big laugh on YouTube myself, and it got some traction there. And I've been looking at where people drop off and reviewing that, and kind of same with my documentary, is editing of what I think a good pacing is versus what, the data shows, and kind of using that to reframe. And, even when I did Zen Comedy, I kind of cut things quicker. Like, you were quicker into the comedy sets of each comedian, and also recognizing that, I don't need to leave in the comedian, and, hey, thank you, happy to be here. I can just cut into their first joke, and kind of getting more and more comfortable with cuts. And I think some of that, and then that leads to distribution of you're having a shorter, more fine-tuned thing. I'm still figuring out I want to get better at doing trailers, because I think trailers really live or die. And I'm curious of, it's just hard because so many trailers, watch anything about trailers, it's about full feature films. No one's cutting comedy trailers. But I think there's certain things like that. And then also, I hired an artist to do the artwork for Zen Comedy. And I think just understanding the hiring an artist to do the artwork and taking the extra time, because it's just like wine, we're all just looking at for the fancy bottle.
Totally.
This one looks nice, I guess I'll put this on. So I think your film live or dies by a trailer and by the graphics. And I think distribution knows that, and they can't always say that to you. They can't be like, this doesn't look good, because it does meet the requirements,
Right. Yeah. I think that makes total sense. I love your idea of being able to put the big laugh up on YouTube and actually be able to track where people are dropping off. You wish that you could do that for, Amazon or Tubi or whatever, that would be really valuable data to have. And I wish that the platforms that are out there had that level of transparency, that level of management over your content and how it's being viewed, who's viewing it, obviously not down to specific people, but in aggregate, knowing a lot more about that kind of, having access to those analytics so that you can adjust as you go forward. I wish that we had more of that.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing helpful with Tubi is they tell you which episode earns the most, earning between episodes. And as you can imagine, episode one earns the most, as people start with episode one. But it makes me curious of how far do they get? Do they make it to, that leaves so much more to be where am I doing wrong if I could get you to watch the other episodes or further in,
Yeah. Well, anyway, it sounds like you're on a great trajectory. And like I said, look forward to seeing how it goes for you into the future. So where can people follow you and get in touch with you if they want that kind of thing? Anything you want to plug, now's your chance to do so.
Yeah. I mean, first off, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I love the podcast. You're doing killer work. I'm thank so you. Happy that you are continuing to do this.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So I you can just find me, Zach Lyman Podcast on Instagram, thebiglaughshow.com, zencomedymovie.com. Those are kind of the main places, but mostly on Instagram. If people feel free to reach out, message me, ask me any questions about it. I'm an open book, so I don't
sounds
care.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I love open books on this show. I love when I get these conversations where everybody's just open and honest. I'm sure you've listened to enough episodes to hear me praise that. I'm always praising it. So I'm just all for honesty and transparency in our world as much as we can get, especially in the world of filmmaking. So really appreciate that. Cool. All right. Well, thanks again for coming on the show, and good luck. Best of luck with everything going forward.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Thank you so much.
All right, that's all for today. Thanks everybody for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please do rate and or review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. That is the best way that you can help me grow the show and reach a wider audience of independent filmmakers and others who just want to try to understand this crazy, crazy world of independent film distribution. As always, feel free to contact me directly with any feedback or suggestions for the show. You can find me on Twitter, or should I say X, or Instagram at DarkRoseColin, or you can email me at Colin@DarkRosePictures.com. That's Colin with one L, C-O-L-I-N, at DarkRosePictures.com. And by the way, DarkRosePictures.com is my website for my feature and other projects. Its purpose is not just to promote my films, but to tell the story with honesty and transparency of my own personal filmmaking journey. So if you want to follow the process of an independent filmmaker from development to distribution, this is a great way to do that. So check it out, DarkRosePictures.com. Anyway, I'd like to thank Zach Lyman for yet another honest take on his distribution experiences. And as usual, a big thank you to Jeff Reimuth for his timely and accomplished editing work. I've got more great guests lined up for you in the coming weeks, talking all things indie distribution. So please stay tuned, keep getting those movies out there into the world, and thank you so much for listening.